information is free.
The law is free.
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
We care.
It
shows.
The law
is free.
The country.
Whether you went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
For the eyes of the world now look into space, to the moon, and to the planets beyond, and we have vowed that we shall not see it governed by a hostile flag of conquest, but by a banner of freedom and peace. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 132 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's July 17th, 2009. My name is James Avampalato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, bringing you all the news and politics, conspiracies and cover-ups. This week, we got bombs, moms, coups, and checkpoints, 9/11 updates and a new investigation, homeless, deficits, a new world currency, and microchip ID cards, the cyberspace war attacks and anniversaries, and all the latest on Obamasiah and the Apostles of War with torture probes, MSNBC, CIA, hit squads, birthers, eugenics, and czars, all that and tons more. It's episode 132 of MediaMonarchy.com.
Don't know what's going on in the scene behind. I'm
going back many a year for the Holy War. That was Matthew Sweet with a track from his seminal record, Girlfriend, Jesus. 91, maybe? Continuing the holy theme from our previous episode. But we're here, and it's now, and it's episode 132 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's July 17th, 2009. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show. And this transmission originates from the home base of the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org. Live every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Time. And thanks to ZeroPointRadio.com and RevereRadio.net and Free Radio Olympia, FROlympia.org, KBFR, BoulderFreeRadio.com, and CascadiaPublicRadio.org, all for helping rebroadcast Media Monarchy.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
You can, of course, get in touch with me through FaceSpace, TwitterTube, Yoohoo. I always want to say Yoohoo. I said Yoohoo a couple weeks ago and didn't catch myself until I was re-listening to it. Yahoo, Gmail, Skype, Instant Messenger, iTunes, RadioForAll.net, and Archive.org, all with Media Monarchy as the username or keyword. Another chaotic week of news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. And as the helicopters and jets fly overhead, Portland, Oregon, home of the latest Dave Chappelle secret show, apparently. But before we get into all the wonderful, horrible news, let's glance at Google News on this July 17th morning. We've got the House panel approving health legislation. We've got the Jakarta, Indonesia coordinated hotel bombings. And we also see New York ratcheting up homeland security. And we've had the whole Sotomayor confirmation circus. I haven't really spent much time. We won't really be going over it on this episode. Just another phony change agent. Some of the other things going on, a good note, and this is interesting. It's on the cover of our own Oregonian today. It's on the sidebar. Obama administration scraps logging plan in Oregon. And they're going to do it because of carbon. But what takes up most of the front page above the fold on today's Oregonian is a big lineup of all the boys and girls being sent to the latest meat grinder, Afghan surge. Again, this is Obama's war now. We've now shifted it to the Afghan surge because that's who really attacked us on 9/11. All based on a lie, as we went over on the B-side previously. All wars are based on deception, so whether it's 9/11 for the War of Terror, or the Gulf of Tonkin for Vietnam, or the USS Maine for the Spanish-American War, Pearl Harbor for World War II, or the Reichstag fire. So we'll continue to glance at Google News throughout the show and see what happens on this Friday, July 17th. So it's episode 132 of MediaMonarchy.com. We've got all the latest on your false savior. Not quite the kind of change you expected, is it? Obama reluctant as Holder considers a probe into torture. U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder is considering whether to probe allegations of the use of brutal torture by the Central Intelligence Agency. Holder is to decide whether he will appoint a prosecutor to look into the nature of the torture of terrorist suspects since 9/11. Pushing ahead with a criminal investigation would bring Holder into conflict with Obama. Obama has appeared reluctant to probe the alleged use of torture and brutal interrogation methods by the government of his predecessor, George W. Bush. The previous puppet. This whole story spirals around the CIA, and are they torturing, and is there Cheney's secret assassination squad? And, of course, the questions all, or rather the answer to all these questions is, of course, a resounding fucking yes. And it still goes on. So you can find links in there to the New York Times, to the AFP, to Raw Story, to the Washington Times, to the Washington Post, to HistoryCommons.org, to CBS3, to the Deutsche Press Agency, to Wikipedia, and Alex Constantine's Blacklist. CIA played a leading role in warrantless surveillance. Washington's blog goes into the CIA's rogue operation. And there's all the hubbub about what did we know? Who was briefed? Who wasn't briefed? Oh my God, the CIA misled Congress? Really? Pretty sure that's been their job since 1947, when they were set up under the National Security Act. And it's been downhill since then. So let's hear from the woman who announced the assassination of Harvey Milk to the public. That would be Senator Dianne Feinstein on the CIA's history.
In our final moments, I want to turn to another subject, and this involves your role, Senator Feinstein, as chair of the Intelligence Committee. CIA Director Panetta briefed you recently on an eight-year-old program that he had stopped, but that Congress had never been told about. Now there are reports that Vice President Cheney ordered the CIA not to tell Congress about it. One, should Congress have been told about this program, which apparently was never fully implemented, and what do you make of the Vice President's apparent role in telling the CIA not to brief Congress?
The answer is yes, Congress should have been told. We should have been briefed before the commencement of this kind of sensitive program. Director Panetta did brief us 2 weeks ago, I believe it was on the 24th of June, said he had just learned about the program, described it to us, indicated that he had canceled it, and as had been reported, did tell us that he was told that the Vice President had ordered that the program not be briefed to the Congress.
CIA's History of Lying to Congress, a great new piece from Lisa Pease over on Consortium News, a frequent guest on blackopradio.com, writer, researcher, historian, movie buff. On TV this week, with a measure of disbelief in their voices, the pundits asked, did the CIA lie to or deliberately mislead Congress? How is that not a rhetorical question? The agency has a long history of manipulating Congress and others to support its programs. That this was posed as an actual question reveals the media's historical illiteracy in the matter. We've got more clips of Holt and Issue, and they won't deny that this CIA program was the Cheney assassination ring. And all the ugly updates. From 911blogger.com, origins of the CIA's assassination program, who proposed it, and what its code name was. The CIA assassination program that was recently in the media was actually first partially revealed by the Washington Post in 2005 when details enabling his originator to be identified were published. The program made news in the last few days as CIA Director Leon Panetta admitted the agency withheld info from Congress, although the CIA never actually used it to assassinate anybody. Nevertheless, the program's duties seem to have been taken over by something journalist Seymour Hersh called an executive assassination wing that was run out of the office of Vice President Dick Cheney, and this grouping did go on missions and kill people. The program was first mentioned in Dana Priest's groundbreaking article that highlighted the existence of the CIA's network of black sites. CIA holds terror suspects in secret prisons, which was published in November 2005. Now, there's more on this in New York Times writer James Risen's 2006 book, State of War. And there's lots of sources and lots of connections to Kofor Black, Rich B., the Pentagon, the State Department, and on and on and on. Operation Box Top. There you have it. Yes, Virginia, the U.S. did carry out foreign assassinations. That's from Washington's blog again. Jeremy Scahill doing skating great work, dissembling the Obamasiah. His latest piece on RebelReports.com. The Dems' selective amnesia on assassination. Clinton did it, and Obama does it too. New reports of massive spying and criminality by the U.S. government. That's from Global Research. CIA didn't tell Congress about program to kill al-Qaeda leaders. That's from the Washington Post. CIA assassination program revealed. Nothing new under the sun. That's from Kurt Nemo. The unit was so secret that even the former CIA director George Tenet did not control its activities. CIA contemplated human hit squads, but instead turned to killer drones. That's from Danger Room. But again, from Washington's blog, he notes, the secret program can't be foreign assassinations because Congress was briefed on that in 01, and the New York Times wrote about it in 02. Washington Post says the CIA assassin program was nearing a new phase, and we even have an ex-CIA agent suggesting that CIA and military assassins cooperated. So let's listen to a little clip from MSNBC CIA.
We go back to the CIA and their relationship with the U.S. Congress and their ability to serve the American people. Contessa, what's going on?
Well, okay, so the Huffington Post today is looking at what the CIA may have been misleading these Democratic lawmakers, or Congress in general, really, about. We know about the waterboarding allegations, but Huffington Post today is pointing out that it could also be this secret so-called executive assassination ring that Seymour Hersh referred to when he was at the University of Minnesota giving a little speech. Hersh alleges that it was a secret program made up of these super elite military forces that reported to no one. They didn't report to the Defense Department. They didn't report to the ambassador or even to the CIA station chief. He says that it's possible may have reported to Dick Cheney. That may have been who was overseeing these.
Just maybe. It might have been Obama's cousin, Darth Cheney. So all that hullabaloo continues to spill out, but again, we pretty much have documentation of what the agency, the company, has been up to for a long, long time, and we don't need the talking heads asking their rhetorical bullshit questions. But now it's on to more from Obamasiah and the Apostles of War, Birthers, Eugenics, and Czars. From The Independent, Ghana on Obama and, of course, his recent trip. They said, we want him to rule all African countries. And interestingly enough, the Daily Graphic on modernghana.com, again, in regards to his recent trip to Ghana, this from Paul Joseph Watson, a major Ghanaian news outlet has been caught in a revealing slip-up after it reported that Obama's recent visit to the African country was a return to his birthplace. We'll, of course, note that Article 2, Section 1 of the Constitution states no person except a natural-born citizen shall be eligible to the office of president. That would invalidate the legitimacy of Obama's presidency if, as a growing number of people believe, he was in fact born in Kenya, not Hawaii, as he claims. After mounting pressure, the Obama campaign released a Hawaiian birth certificate on June 13, 2008, but skeptics claim that it showed signs of being forged. Contained in an otherwise relatively mundane account of Obama's recent visit to Ghana in the Daily Graphic news outlet is a sentence sure to raise eyebrows amongst people like journalist Jerome Corsi, who's been at the forefront of the Obama birth certificate scandal since well before the election. The full paragraph reads, quote, for Ghana, Obama's visit will be a celebration of another milestone in African history as it hosts the first ever African-American president on this presidential visit to the continent of his birth. Make of that what you will. Side note from clicktohouston.com, Obama's teleprompter breaks mid-speech. I'm sure the phony right-wing talking heads have fun with that. They say, oh, he can't speak without a teleprompter. And I, as if perhaps you don't know, if you're new to the show, if you are new, welcome. I welcome you. We're nonpartisan here. We know that both major parties are completely corruptible, blackmailable, controlled. They prop each other up. 8 years, you throw the bums out. New bums come in, the agenda moves forward. That's what's happening now, except we just recently saw one of the most amazing, slick PR advertising campaigns for a president we've ever seen in American history. And I'm just trying to push you to have your old shit moment. The buyer's remorse. Now, having said all that, we're going to get into one more bit of the birther meme. And again, I'll preface it by saying I think the birther meme to Obama is akin to controlled demolition to 9/11. Yes, it's suspicious. Is it going to be the thing to bring the story down? I don't think so. Interestingly enough, the suspicious Dr. Orly Tates gets the headlines. O-R-L-Y, Tates, T-A-I-T-Z, California lawyer. This from military.com, soldier balks at deploying, says Obama isn't president. The attorney representing an Army major fighting deployment to Afghanistan because he believes Barack Obama is not legally his commander-in-chief is declaring victory after the soldier's orders were revoked. California lawyer Orly Tate says any service member may now refuse any order by questioning Obama's legitimacy. Do you know what this means? Tate asked in a telephone interview with Military.com Tuesday, about an hour after hearing from Major Stefan Cook, the officer fighting his deployment to Afghanistan. It means the Obama administration has blinked. They have no cards to play with. The moment I filed a lawsuit, they didn't even fight. Can you imagine what are the consequences? This is disastrous. We'll have no military, because anytime any soldier, any sailor, any airman doesn't want to follow any orders, all he has to do is call an attorney and say, I don't want to follow this order because I question the legitimacy of the commander-in-chief. There are links in there for more on this. The Ledger, Inquirer, Raw Story, Raw Replay. Oh, and that's an interesting note. We have Olbermann, SportsCenter, on MSNBCIA, calling this guy a coward. Because he doesn't want to go fight in the war. Now, don't you see the phony left-right bullshit in that? Because, remember, now this is Obama's war. So now if you don't want to fight in Obama's war, you're a fucking coward. But before, you know, it was George Bush's war. And you were a conscientious objector. But now you're a coward. Phony left-right paradigm. It's important to note that Webster Tarpley has been doing a lot of work with Philip Berg, who was really the guy to help bust out the whole birth certificate scandal. So if you want to call this a phony right-wing, far-right conspiracy against the black guy, this was started by Phil Berg, a Jewish Democrat lawyer from Pennsylvania. Just saying. From threat level, Obama claims immunity as new spy case takes center stage. That's just another example of the Obama administration carrying the football from the previous puppet administration, fighting the same battles, whether it's against, you know, Geronimo's family wanting his skull back from Skull and Bones, or about telecom immunity, or about any of this stuff. They're fighting the same battles. They may not cut down some trees in Oregon just to kind of throw you off, make you feel all right about the new greenwash, but the meat grinder goes forward. From the Washington Post, admin moves toward revisiting Bush anti-terror policies. After trying for months to shake off the legacy of their predecessors and focus on their own priorities, the Obama administration officials have begun to concede that they cannot leave the fight against terrorism unexamined and are reluctantly moving to examine some of the most controversial and clandestine episodes. The acknowledgement came amid fresh disclosures about CIA activity that had been hidden from Congress for 7 years. The secrecy surrounding a little-understood electronic surveillance program that operated without court approval, and word that Attorney General Eric H. Holder Jr. favors naming a criminal prosecutor to examine whether U.S. interrogators tortured terrorism suspects. Again, is that... That should be a rhetorical question. I think we pretty much know that they have, and they are, and they will. In your name. Now, it'll be interesting to see if this vaunted, remember it was going to be a truth commission a couple months ago with Leahy. Now we're going to see if Holder's going to appoint a blue ribbon panel to investigate this shit. And it'll probably be someone like John Skull and Bones Kerry. He's good at getting out and busting out the limited hangout. Because you know the dam's going to break, you put your controllers out, and you make sure that only the information you want people to know comes out. And they hail it as an amazing, thorough, investigative breakthrough. Senate Democrats attach hate crimes law to defense bill. That's from the caucus blog in the New York Times. However, let's get into this. Another name you should know to the criminal cabinet, an apostle of war, John Holdren, H-O-L-D-R-E-N, Obama's science czar, says forced abortions, mass sterilization, and a quote-unquote planetary regime needed. Again, from Paul Joseph Watson. Shocking proposals to mass sterilize the population by artificially medicating municipal water supplies, which were outlined by President Obama's top science czar in his 1977 book, Ecoscience. These plans are already in effect as global sperm counts drop and gender-bending chemicals pollute our rivers and lakes. As we highlighted previously, last Saturday, the article about Holdren calling for a planetary regime to enforce totalitarian population control measures, alongside John P. Holdren's advocacy for a global planetary regime to enforce forced abortion, government seizure of children born out of wedlock, and mandatory bodily implants designed to prevent pregnancy. Obama's top advisor also called for, quote, adding a sterilant to drinking water or staple foods, end quote. Holdren adds that the sterilant must meet stiff requirements and that it must only affect humans and not livestock. Quote, it must be uniformly effective. Despite widely varying doses received by individuals and despite varying degrees of fertility and sensitivity among individuals, it must be free of dangerous or unpleasant side effects, and it must have no effect on members of the opposite sex, children, old people, pets, or livestock. End quote, wrote Holdren with co-author Paul Ehrlich and Ann Ehrlich. Holdren notes that the proposal to forcibly mass sterilize the public against their will seems to horrify people. And yet it doesn't seem to bother him too much amidst the myriad of other totalitarian Dr. Strangelove-style ideas that are put forward in the book as a way to carry out an aggressive agenda of population reduction. Interestingly enough, because of the outcry, because of the alternative media, because of the researchers and bloggers doing the digging, getting the book, Ecoscience, scanning up all the pages, putting up the quotes. It's not a conspiracy theory. Well, it's a conspiracy, but it's not a fucking theory. Holdren forced to respond to controversy over totalitarian population control proposals. Obama's top science and tech advisor, John P. Holdren, has been forced to issue a statement in which he denies advocating the totalitarian population control proposals outlined in his own academic textbook. However, Holdren's response is a tissue of half-truths, spin, and outright lies. Ecoscience is the name of the book. So, we of course had Michael Taylor, now head of the FDA's Food Safety Working Group, appointed by Obama. Michael Taylor is an ex-vice president for Monsanto. Here we have John Holdren, the science czar, talking about forced abortions, sterilization, depopulation. Oh, but that's not all, kids. The change just keeps on a-coming. We've also got Cass Sunstein. C-A-S-S-S-U-N-S-T-E-I-N. This guy is Obama's choice to head the White House Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs. It's the benign-sounding posts you need to watch out for. And he, according to the New York Post and other outlets, would like to gag the Internet. He being behind, of course, the Fight the Smears website about the Obamacide last year. We also have Francis S. Collins, Obama's pick to head the National Institutes of Health, and he, of course, comes from work on the Human Genome Project, which is connected to the international business machines and their final solutions, IBM, the final solutions company, and, of course, the Watsons. Thomas Watson worked for IBM and the Holler at the Punch Card that helped make the Holocaust happen. IBM and the Holocaust. And then the other Watson, James Watson, back in October of 2007, he had to resign his post at the Cold Spring Harbor Laboratory. You know, he talked about how stupid black people are. And that's a common theme you'll find among all these eugenicists. Again, Margaret Sanger, head of Planned Parenthood, called black people weeds, wrote letters to Hitler, he wrote back. He gave her awards. Bill Gates' dad on the board of Planned Parenthood. It's eugenics. I know you think it's all nice and fuzzy and green, and you're out campaigning for it, but you've been hoodwinked. Again. We just recently had Miss Hillary speaking at, of course, the Council on Foreign Relations. Just a couple bricks down the top of the pyramid. All your favorite celebrities and talking heads and politicians are pretty much all members of the Council on Foreign Relations. She recently spoke there and said straight out that the CFR tells government, quote, what we should be doing and how we should think about the future. And finally, on this note that wraps this up, an important article with massive documentation, again, from Paul Joseph Watson, The Population Reduction Agenda for Dummies. Massive. Dozens and dozens of links. Tons of video. It's all there. Such as the University of Oregon giving sterilization PhD. And UNESCO, all of it. It's eugenics. It's their end game. But that's not all on the Obamacide and the Apostles of War. I mentioned in the last episode about the EATER military robots, E-A-T-R, that could live by eating organic material such as corpses, and they could roam the countryside forever like some kind of fucked up military Wally. That sometimes when I post things up, and of course the feed goes out to my Facebook page where I try and start brush fires and plant seeds and push buttons and maybe generally piss some of my friends off. But that's my job. So when you put up things about the eater robots living on corpses, people think that's fake. But when I put up this, somebody thought it was real. Obama axes the Pentagon plan to build a $1 billion tank in the shape of a dragon.
As part of President Obama's commitment to reduce Pentagon spending, today the White House announced it plans to scrap the multi-billion dollar program to build a gigantic tank in the shape of a dragon. Joining us now is critic of the cut, retired General Theodore Cotty.
Hello, Brennan.
General Cotty, opponents of the dragon tank point to things like its $10 million fangs and $35 million prehensile robotic tail and say, this is somewhat excessive.
Brennan, developing new technology is essential to maintaining America's military advantage.
Yes, of course, I understand.
Just for example, we figured out how to make the dragon's scales glow in the dark.
Yes, but where are the limits for this kind of spin?
Look, the Pentagon is reasonable. I mean, we've eliminated the pool and the ballroom in the stomach of the dragon.
But the final plans still call for a million-watt external stereo system.
Well, the stereo system was a necessity.
I see here its purpose was to, quote, play the dragon's fearsome roar as it approaches the enemies, sending them scattering like field mice.
Look, we need technology for tomorrow's battlefield, like a laser that sets a mile-wide skull-shaped area to land on fire.
But
or the cyber arm, so after one of our troops is shot, his body will keep firing guns while rock music plays.
So canceling projects like these is going to put the future generations of Americans in danger.
Absolutely. We've made this mistake before. When Bill Clinton was elected, he canceled the giant invisible Swiss submarine project, and then the USS Cole was bombed.
Well, that's true, but the military has had 5 years to complete the Dragon.
Was the atomic bomb or karate developed in 5 years?
I understand.
President Obama is putting lives at risk. The only explanation I can think of is that he's terrified of dragons.
House insiders say the president may even push to take down that all-seeing eye from the top of the Washington Monument.
You'll face a lot of resistance there. The eye's become a crucial part of Homeland Security. It costs a lot to maintain, but it sees all.
Well, General Cotty, thank you for your time. I appreciate you being here.
You're welcome, Brent.
Coming up next, the new Harry Potter film is encouraging more children to see movies made from books.
And, of course, it was the onion, and it was the all-seeing eye atop the Washington Monument that really sealed the deal for me on that one. So is it live, is it, or is it Memorex? Is it news, or is it satire? Is it the Daily Mail or the Daily Show? That's what we try and break down on MediaMonarchy.com. Trying to help you see the world stage for the shell game that it is. This is, of course, a time of interesting and important anniversaries. So our next post, History Mystery, The Unspeakable, Kennedys, Elites, and Freemasons. First off, a great interview. It was a one-on-one from two guys whose work I admire, but sometimes love to hate to love. It's Oliver Stone and the relaunch of JFK and the Unspeakable.
So many of the things that you'd look at from an empire that fell seem to be going on with our empire now. Do you think we'll ever get back up again?
You know, you have been so eloquent, and I've never seen you. This is your best. You said everything I could say better.
What's your thought?
I was born in 1946. I think we took a wrong turn in 1946 and 45 with the Hiroshima and Nagasaki. I think I'm doing a 10-part documentary. I've been working on it for a year and a half about American national security state and how it came to be. It's a fascinating story. I was talking about that. By the way, one of the stories is this Kennedy story.
You sent it to me. I read it. Yeah.
And I want you to. James Douglas is a Catholic who wrote a beautifully well. It's a very factual about.
I don't know that again.
Kennedy is murdered. It says here why he died and why it matters. Because Kennedy did have that moment in the sun when he. There was almost a nuclear war that wiped us out. I mean, if Bush had been in the White House, we would have had a nuclear war. I mean, Kennedy saying no. And if Reagan's in the White House, what if Bush Sr. had been in the White House, I believe there would have been a war, and probably maybe Clinton. So let's be honest here. Can Obama resist the military when they say, push the button, we got to go? Action is required.
Everyone in the public eye is caricatured in some way. I don't care who you are. That's part of the job of people like myself, comedians, we do that. It must be terribly annoying for you to have been caricatured as the conspiracy guy, because you're a lot more thoughtful than that.
Well, you know, and we're sharing the same boat, and let's fight for it. Let's keep hoping. You have great people on the show. You know, it's a question of knowledge, and you bring people on the show who are knowledgeable, smart, young. There's hope.
Now, of course, this is all interesting because he's with Bill Maher. Bill Maher, of course, no friend to 9/11 Truth. If you recall the amazing episode where 9/11 Truth activists pretty much shut down his live HBO show. And he'll belittle folks like Mos Def when they talk about 9/11 Truth. And again, that's the blind spot of the phony left-right doctrine. You can see the flaws of the other party, but you can't see it of your own. You can know that, oh, yeah, of course, you know, we overthrew Chile and assassinated their president, CIA coup, Guatemala, Iran, all around. But we would never do that to our own president. We would never do that to our own buildings. So that full clip is up. It's about a 15-minute interview with Oliver Stone on Real Time with Bill Maher, where he talks about and shows the book. It got some screen time. James Douglas's JFK and the Unspeakable. Book sales shot back out. The book is fantastic, and the flashback link for you, if you recall, my friends, back in June of 2008, James Douglas spoke here in Portland at PALS. I recorded it, posted it up, and it's on archive.org for you. Hundreds of downloads already. Listen to James Douglas's talk. But let's move down the history mystery list. Again from Alex Constantine, again, shocking revelations of the U.S. businesses and the Nazis. We already mentioned IBM and the Holocaust, Edwin Black. We've got Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler from Anthony C. Sutton. It's all documented. Project Paperclip, the Biolabs. An interesting article from CNN, some suspects conspiracy in Holocaust Museum case. This is, of course, about the Von Braun shooting, but it's interesting that CNN has an article that interviews Captain Eric May of the Ghost Troop, who is generally doing his work trying to bust open false flag operations. I'm not going there in this case, but it's there for you. A few notes on our Christian leaders. One from, again, the Independent, independent.co.uk. It's a very nice house in the country, but not for an orgy. This would be an article about how the elites get together in the countryside and have eyes wide shut like orgies and God knows what else. But again, oh, that's just fake stuff in the movies. It doesn't really happen in real life. Bohemian Grove protest photos from this year. Of course, the Bohemian Grove, where all our great men meet in the California redwoods to frolic around and perform mock human sacrifices and druidic rituals, urinate on things. Again, it's the place Richard Nixon called the most faggy goddamn thing you could imagine. The third note on our supposed Christian leaders and secret societies, this from the French agency Press, Freemasons jailed in Fiji over sorcery claims. A New Zealand man spent a wretched night in a Fiji jail after police raided his Freemasons meeting when frightened residents suspected witchcraft, this according to the New Zealand Herald. The man, who did not wish to be identified, blamed dopey village people for the raid on the island of Denarau, in which 14 members of the Freemasons Lodge of La Toca were herded into police cars and jailed for the night. Police also seized lodge paraphernalia, including wands, compasses, and a skull. The man told the Herald that the meeting was interrupted by banging on the door, and there were these village people and the police demanding to be let in. Nothing sinister was going on, but such is the nature of life in Fiji, they were taken to a nearby police station. The lodge secretary showed the police a copy of the permit allowing the meeting, but was told the permit was not the problem. He said the group had to spend the night in lockdown in conditions that were hot and uncomfortable because there was nowhere to lie down. Police Director of Operations Waisia Tabuka told Legend FM News in Fiji that the group were being investigated for allegedly practicing sorcery. The New Zealand man said that when they were freed the following morning, they were told their release was on orders of the Prime Minister's office. Freemasonry is a centuries-old worldwide fraternity which traditionally practices secret rituals. Its members deny there is anything pernicious about the rituals. Nothing to see here. Move along. Yesterday was, amazingly, the 10th anniversary of the assassination of John F. Kennedy, Jr. And here we are, 10 years later.
10 years ago today, John Fitzgerald Kennedy Jr. died after the plane that he was piloting crashed near Martha's Vineyard. JFK Jr. was born on November 25, 1960, to President John F. Kennedy and First Lady Jacqueline Kennedy, becoming the first baby born to a president-elect in U.S. history. The 38-year-old JFK Jr. was an international celebrity and a magazine editor at the time of his crash. His wife, Carolyn Bessette Kennedy, and her sister, Lauren Bessette, also died in that crash.
On a hot July night a decade ago, Americans learned JFK Jr. had died.
Once again, the Kennedy family is steeling itself tonight to deal with tragedy.
The son of Camelot was killed in a plane crash with his wife Carolyn and her sister Lauren. The man was a paparazzi magnate and crowned the sexiest man alive, was dead at 38. Born in 1960, the son of President John F. Kennedy and Jackie Kennedy, John F. Kennedy Jr. spent his early years living in the White House with his older sister Carolyn.
President Kennedy died.
After his father was assassinated in 1963, the family moved to New York City, where John attended private school, then headed to Brown University and NYU Law School, but he did not follow in his father's footsteps.
Ladies and gentlemen, meet George.
In 1995, he decided to start his own magazine.
You know, I've been lucky enough to have a lot of opportunities and feel very fortunate that there is this energy associated with it.
So many people who, you know, remember the Kennedy presidency always assumed that someday he'd go into politics.
Now, 10 years after his tragic death, the public fascination continues. People magazine has just released these never-before-seen photos. And with the ailing health of his uncle, Senator Ted Kennedy, the family's legacy is being remembered.
Ted Kennedy has carried the family torch for 40 years. And there's a real question now whether there will be another Kennedy family member who can step forward and be a national leader.
I remember it so well. I spent the better part of the summer of 1999 living with my brother in New York City. His then fiance was out of the country for the summer, so the space was there, and it was a good chance to hang out with my brother for a long time. It was July 1999. It was super hot. There were brownouts and blackouts, almost mimicking the summer of 77. I recall I saw the Summer of Sam while I was there, and that kind of bugged the hell out of me. 77, 99, hot as hell, New York City. Interestingly enough, as I ramble on here, the Son of Sam killer, David Berkowitz, was actually caught the night before I was born. On August 10th, 1977, when he was caught. But I was in New York when JFK Jr.'s plane went down. I saw the pile of flowers by the office. And at that point, I just thought it was a sad accident. Now we know, thanks to the fantastic work of John Hankey and his two seminal documentaries, JFK 2, The Bush Connection, and The Assassination of JFK Jr., I was blown away when I watched The Assassination of JFK Jr. So many things I did not know about and did not remember. Because, of course, at 99, I wasn't paying attention to any of the news or politics or conspiracies or cover-ups. But even post-9/11, studying 9/11 and studying JFK, I'd never spent much time on John Jr. Was there another pilot on board the plane? Why did the military take over the operation? I implore you to watch The Assassination of JFK Jr. That's not the last of the anniversaries that we're going to hit. You know what's coming up. The 40th anniversary of the amazing moon mission. But before we get there, we got to get through cyberspace war attacks and anniversaries. An excellent article from James Corbett up on CorbettReport.com, Worldwide Wiretap. And that really breaks down what I'm going to give you the thumbnail sketch of. We went over last week, of course, the cyber attacks that, of course, were amazingly timed, just as they're trying to get through this cybercom setup. But, of course, you know, they always need the catalyzing event. I don't think this was it. But from Threat Level, as well as many other sources, Breitbart, Federal Computer Weekly, CNET, DoD Buzz, on, cyber attacks traced to the UK and US. International finger-pointing in the recent cyber attacks against the U.S. and South Korean websites has widened to include the U.K. and the U.S., as researchers examining the attacks trace them to a server in the United Kingdom. But the U.K. company that owns the server says it, in turn, traced the attacks to a VPN connection originating in Miami, Florida. VPN is some kind of personal network. I forget the V. With hawks in Congress and the press urging President Obama to launch an all-out cyber war in retaliation for the website outages, things are looking bad for the Sunshine State. Though it should be noted that the Miami connection was likely just another proxy used by the hackers, who could be based in the U.S. or anywhere else. Researchers at Vicus Security in Hanoi, who reported findings at the U.K. server on their company's blog, say that the distributed denial-of-service attacks that struck more than three dozen government and commercial sites last week were launched from more than 166,000 computers in 74 countries controlled by a server in the UK. We even have the IP range for that server there. It's registered to Global Digital Broadcast, which streams digital TV content from Latin America to the consumer. A company representative was unavailable for content, but in a July 14th press release, the company indicated that it had traced the attacks to a VPN connection from Miami controlled by Digital Latin America, DLATV.com, a Buenos Aires-based company that provides technical services to providers of digital content. Three reasons why U.S. cybersecurity sucks from Danger Room again, but again from Kurt Nemo, internet attack propaganda increases as the cyber bill approaches. Earlier this week and last week, South Korean intelligence, of course a creation of U.S. military intelligence, blamed the enfeebled Stalinist regime in North Korea for a series of cyber attacks on the U.S. government and commercial websites. As numerous observers have noted since the attacks, it is unlikely North Korea was behind the attacks. Some analysts have questioned the North's involvement, saying it may be the work of industrial spies or pranksters, reports Reuters. Instead of North Korea, the Korea Communications Commission now claims the original attacks were based in Germany, Austria, Georgia, the U.S., and South Korea. The location of the hackers behind the attacks is still unknown, according to the KCC. The cyber attacks will now enter a new phase by attacking personal computers and wiping out hard disks, South Korea claims. South Korean web security firm OnLab, which has closely examined the attacks, says the new phase would target data on tens of thousands of infected PCs. OnLab sells antivirus software, online security solutions, and network security applications such as firewalls. The new alleged threat and accompanying propaganda comes as Senate Commerce Chairman John J. Rockefeller IV, senator from my home state of West Virginia, prepares for a July committee vote on cybersecurity legislation he introduced in April with Senator Olympia Snowe, Republican from Maine. One of the bill's most controversial provisions would give the president the power to effectively shut off the internet during a cyber crisis similar to the one now threatening PCs, according to South Korea and its U.S.-created intelligence agency. See how that works? Oh, and what a coincidence. Our good friends at Science Applications International, SAIC, acquires cybersecurity product testing firm Atlan Incorporated, A-T-L-A-N, Inc. But from the L.A. Times, Obama would endanger privacy with the new NSA cybersecurity plan. That's right, you know, they're going to move this CyberComm into Fort Meade with the NSA. Again, one of the other criminal organizations set up thanks to the National Security Act of 1947. CIA, NSA, spying, all of it since then. Cybersecurity is a real issue, as evidenced by the virus behind July 4th cyber attacks that hobbled government and business websites in the U.S. and South Korea. It originated from internet provider addresses in 16 countries and targeted, among others, the White House and the New York Stock Exchange. Unfortunately, the Obama administration has chosen to combat it in a move that runs counter to its pledge to be transparent. The administration reportedly is proceeding with a Bush-era plan to use the National Security Agency to screen government computer traffic on private sector networks. Surprise, surprise, the American Telegraph and Telephone Company is slated to be the likely test site. Remember Mark Klein and the room at AT&T? The NSA room? The splitter? The spying? The scooping up of everything? Again, I throw out the rhetorical question. You think it's any fucking coincidence that the iPhone is married to AT&T? This classified pilot program dubbed Einstein 3 is developed but not yet rolled out. It takes two offenders from President Bush's contentious secret surveillance program and puts them in charge of scrutinizing all internet traffic going to or from federal government agencies. Despite its name, the Einstein 3 program is more genie than genius, an omnipotent force run by the NSA via AT&T's secret rooms that does the government's bidding. Spying. The last time around, this sort of scheme was known as the Special Access Program, special being code for unconstitutional. That's from the LA Times. We went over a little bit, and Clyde Lewis on the Ground Zero Lounge has gone into it in greater detail, but of course the amazing coincidence that NASA just happened to find this new, great new footage of the original moon landing, of course coming up the 40th anniversary on July 20th. NASA releases unseen moon landing footage and NASA refurbishes video of moon landing. That's from the Washington Times and the Telegraph, respectively. But if we jump to the present day, we have the Space Shuttle Endeavour headed for the International Space Station. The U.S. Space Shuttle Endeavour, with its seven-strong crew, reached orbit and began a flight to the ISS. The launch was Endeavour's sixth attempt. Previous tries were canceled due to gas leaks and, more recently, bad weather.
Shuttle Endeavour, with seven astronauts on board, has blasted off for the International Space Station. The launch was NASA's sixth attempt. Previous tries were cancelled due to gas leaks and, more recently, bad weather. The astronauts are taking a new module to a space lab at the ISS. The total number of people at the station will be record-breaking, 13, while the shuttle is stopped.
The last note here on cyberspace war attacks and anniversaries is something we've alluded to, but I also maybe don't really want to dive fully into here. This is one of those slippery slope kook detector kind of things that you kind of have to tread lightly when you're trying to turn people on to news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. I'm never going to bust out and talk about the moon landing, fake or fact.
In 6 days, God created the heavens and the earth. On the seventh day, Stanley Kubrick sent everything back for modifications. So wrote a critic. 1 year after the death of the famous director, who now rests in peace in the garden of his home just outside London, his wife Christiane and Jan Harlan, his production manager and Christiane's brother, spoke to us about the filming of Barry Lyndon.
Stanley was very much trying to photograph Barry Lyndon so that the atmosphere of the 18th century should be retained on the screen. He loved those paintings from the period. And he didn't know exactly how to do it. There is no camera built for this. So he was looking desperately for faster lenses to shoot a scene at candlelight.
He contacted as many people as possible whenever he needed to know something.
And then he hit it because of an article in in a science magazine, on this Zeiss lens, it turned out that NASA was the original customer of Zeiss, and Stanley then said, well, let me speak to them and see whether we could test it. Let me worry about that. And it finally worked.
For 25 years, critics have been asking one question about the stunning visuals of Barry Lyndon. Why did NASA's top officials, and Wernher von Braun, the father of space conquest, agree to lend Stanley Kubrick this famous camera and its legendary lens, the only one of its kind in the world? This unique lens had been a jealously guarded secret since its conception. Worth millions of dollars, it was the only lens capable of filming spy satellites in pitch darkness. On January the 1st, 2001, Christian Kubrick began looking through the late director's archives. There, buried under a mountain of documents, she discovered a file bearing the White House logo and stamped Top Secret. In it was the answer to that question.
And what is the answer to that question? You'll have to watch the full moon landing fake or fact video. I do find the questions fascinating, and of course there's tons of books and documentaries, It's Only a Paper Moon, A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Moon. But you heard mention in there of course, NASA, first ones to use the Carl Zeiss lens. That's why Barry Lyndon looks so good. But what did he do to deserve that lens, is the question. You of course heard them mention Wernher von Braun, of course, brought over through Operation Paperclip, where we grabbed up all the best Nazis and squeezed out all their occult technology information. So that's the cyberspace war attacks and anniversaries. Right now, I'm going to tell you that you're into hour number 2 of episode 132. Of MediaMonarchy.com. It's July 17th, 2009. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show. Originating this transmission from the home base of the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org. And again, a huge thanks to the fine list of affiliates, ZeroPointRadio.com, RevereRadio.net, FrOlympia.org, BoulderFreeRadio.com, and CascadiaPublicRadio.org, helping me spread the word to you and those you know and love and plant seeds about what's really going down in the New World Order. Another glance at Google News on this Friday morning, July 17th. Senate Repugs say they won't block the vote on the Sotomayor confirmation. Swine flu cases on the rise in West Virginia. And I believe I already mentioned the Obama administration plan, or rather scrapping the logging plan in Western Oregon. Just, you know, throwing some crumbs to the Obamatons. But that's a good thing. I'm not gonna poo-poo that at all. Some good things are going to happen. But now we move on to microchips. Chips in official ID cards raise privacy fears. This from the Associated Press. Climbing into his Volvo, outfitted with a matrix antenna and a Motorola reader he'd bought on eBay for $190, Chris Paget cruised the streets of San Francisco with this objective: to read the identity of strangers wirelessly without ever leaving the car. It took him 20 minutes to strike hacker's gold. Zipping past Fisherman's Wharf, his scanner detected, then downloaded to his laptop, the unique serial numbers of two pedestrians' electronic U.S. passport cards, embedded with RFID tags, radio frequency identification tags. Within an hour, he'd skimmed the identifiers of four more of the new microchipped pass cards from a distance of 20 feet. Embedding identity documents, passports, driver's licenses, and the like, with RFID chips is a no-brainer to government officials. Increasingly, they are promoting it as a 21st century application of technology that will help speed border crossings, safeguard credentials against counterfeiters, and keep terrorists from sneaking into the country. Unless, of course, they've already been tagged by the CIA as terrorism being their designation. So, you know, when guys like J. Michael Springman at the U.S. consulate doesn't want to issue 9/11 hijackers their visas, he's told, no, that terror thing, that's just their cover. But I digress. Chris Paget's February experiment demonstrated something privacy advocates had feared for years, that RFID, coupled with other technologies, could make people trackable without their knowledge or consent. He filmed his drive-by heist, and soon his video went viral on the web, intensifying a debate over a push by government, federal, and state to put tracking technologies in identity documents and over their potential to erode privacy. Putting a traceable RFID in every pocket has the potential to make everybody a blip on someone else's radar screen, critics say, and to redefine Orwellian government snooping for the digital age.
I'm Chris Paget. I'm a hacker working on the passport card and EDL, and we're in downtown San Francisco looking for some tax to clone.
Part of the system.
This is my RFID reader. It's a Motorola Symbol XR400. Supports up to 4 antennas, so I could have aerials all around the car. As it is at the moment, I've only got the 1 antenna. That's this one. So, RF cables come out here and there, obviously. And then an Ethernet cable coming to the laptop in the front seat. So the laptop, all it's doing is telling the reader to continuously scan for tags and then reading back any information that gets, and then just logging it. It's not particularly complicated. It's just a question of finding the right parts and paying the right price.
The pin on the left is the tags that the reader can currently see. So that's tags that are currently in its field of view. In the middle, you've got a list of all of the tags that it's seen at any point since the software was started. So you can see at the top there's two random tags that, I don't know what they are, they could be just about anything. And then the three at the bottom have a known prefix that corresponds to a passport card. So those three were actually passport cards, one of which we know is my test card. Actually belongs to my boss, so I'm not allowed to get one myself.
I personally believe that RFID is very unsuitable to tagging people. So I don't believe that we should have any kind of identity documents with RFID tags in them. So my ultimate goal here would be, my dream for this research would be to see the entire Western Hemisphere Travel Initiative just be scrapped. So that would be the electronic driver's licenses, the passport cards, and there's 3 or 4 other cards that form part of the program as well.
Now, we've been over this a million times. Even Wired, years ago, busted out that RFID tags are completely capturable and hackable. But, of course, they're being sold as it's the ultimate security. We'll make you safer. And that's the illusion of all of this war of terror, Orwellian bullshit. You know, you giving up your liberty for security. Of course, ultimate security is impossible. But there's so much in there. And again, this is all of the moment, whether it's the Pass Act or the Trusted Traveler Initiative, or your passport with an RFID chip, all of it. We got more from the register.co.uk, epic.org. More of Chris Paget's, I was mispronouncing it, P-A-G-E-T, Chris Paget. Some of his videos, some of his talks, even at conventions. EFF, RFIDhackers.com, SmartCardAlliance.org, SpyChips.com, and StopRealIDCoalition.com. Microchips in official ID cards raise privacy fears. Now, one of the interesting ideas behind getting you to just have a card that has all your info But then perhaps that card could also have all your money. And we'll be a cashless control grid society. So as the economy collapses, perhaps we'll all have cards. And you've seen it in comedy movies like Idiocracy, where you need to get a microchip and you have your ID card. But if you become a dissenter, if you become a pain, they'll just turn your card off. You got no money, you got no credits, you got nothing. So we're talking about the money, so let's talk about the econo crash. The homeless, the deficits, the world currency, and the Fed under fire. Amazingly enough, my friends, here it is. You can see it and touch it. Russian President Medvedev shows off a sample coin of new world currency at the G8. And that's from the crazy conspiracy theory site, Bloomberg. So you can click over there and see the photo of Medvedev holding up this proposed world currency coin. But back to the Washington Post, more families becoming homeless, study finds. Lewis Gill doesn't like to turn anyone away. The director of the Bakersfield Homeless Center in California has taken to laying out cots and mattresses between the shelter's 174 registered beds to cope with the rush of homeless families brought to his doors by the financial crisis. Last year, we saw a 34% increase in homeless families and a 24% increase in homeless children, he said. Why do we go beyond capacity? Because in a just society, a child shouldn't have to sleep outside or in a car. Lewis Gill is a frontline witness to the change in the makeup of the country's homeless. The stereotype of a homeless person as a single man no longer applies. A resident of the Bakersfield Center is far more likely to be a young mother with a good, solid job and a mortgage that she just couldn't pay. They're like folks you know and that you've worked with. Maybe the work's not there right now. Maybe they got behind on their payments. Maybe the idea of a typical homeless person has changed. We're seeing individuals come in that never had access to the safety net before. Or rather, never had to access the safety net before. Government figures support Gill's experience. The ravages of the recession, including a surge in foreclosures and unemployment approaching 10%, have driven thousands of families onto the streets. Although the number of homeless individuals remained relatively stable between 07 and 08, the number of homeless families rose 9%, and in rural and suburban areas the number jumped by 56%. According to a report released last week by the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, HUD, you can download that 5.5 meg PDF, all linked up for you. Again, that's what I try and do with Media Monarchy. If we're talking about a new report was released, I'm going to find that report and link it. From Press TV out of Iran, they note that as the economy bites, U.S. states cut prison sentences. And we can only hope that they're letting out the nonviolent drug offenders that shouldn't fucking be there in the first place, and that they're not letting out the murderous, felonious, gangbanger psychopaths. And again, we turn to the question of legalization. From the San Francisco Guardian, California tax officials say legal pot would rake in $1.4 billion. California tax officials have found that a state bill to tax and regulate marijuana like alcohol would generate nearly $1.5 billion in revenue. A state board of equalization report released Wednesday estimates marijuana retail sales would bring $990 million from a 50 per ounce fee and $392 million in sales tax. The bill, introduced by San Francisco Democrat Assemblyman Tom Amiano in February, would allow adults to legally possess, grow, and sell marijuana. We've heard clips. We hit the story back in February when Amiano introduced the bill. Ammiano has promoted the bill as a way to help bridge the state's $26.3 billion budget shortfall. The state could not begin collecting taxes under the bill as written until the federal government legalizes marijuana. A spokesman says Ammiano plans to amend the bill to remove that provision.
It's a controversial proposal, but state tax experts say a bill to tax and regulate marijuana would generate more than $1 billion for the cash-strapped state. State Board of Equalization reports estimates that marijuana retail sales would bring $990 million from a $50 per ounce fee and $392 million in sales taxes. The bill introduced by a San Francisco Democrat last February would allow adults 21 and older to legally possess, grow, and sell marijuana. The bill has been promoted as a way to help bridge the state's more than $26 billion budget shortfall. The legislation would require all revenue from the sale of pot to be used for drug education and rehab programs.
I swiped that video from KFSN and uploaded it to youtube.com/MediaMonarchy. Interestingly enough, Wells Fargo Bank is suing itself. That bizarre story is from foxbusiness.com. We also have the New York Times selling their radio station WQXR. They're going to sell it to WNYC to the tune of 45 mil. Canada's job picture is surprisingly unweak. That's from David Aiken. However, the U.S. budget deficit has topped $1 trillion for the first time ever. Again, from the Associated Press, 9 months into the fiscal year, the federal deficit has topped $1 trillion for the first time ever. The imbalance is intensifying fears about higher interest rates and inflation and already pressuring the value of the dollar. The Treasury Department says the deficit in June totaled $94.3 billion, pushing the total since the budget year started in October to nearly $1.1 trillion. The deficit has been propelled by the huge sum the government has spent to combat the recession and financial crisis, combined with a sharp decline in tax revenues. Paying for wars in Iraq and Afghanistan is also a major factor. But we don't want to talk about that. The country's soaring deficits are making some foreign buyers of U.S. debt nervous, and this could make them reluctant lenders down the road. But on a completely unrelated note, Goldman Sachs earnings easily surpass expectations, and J.P. Morgan Chase reports a 36% jump in second quarter profits. If you want to look at some of the main banksters behind this bullshit, behind the greatest heist in American history that's going down, you want to look at Goldman Sachs, you want to look at J.P. Morgan Chase, Lloyd Blankfein, Jamie Dimon, all of them. And of course, it's the revolving door. You got Paulson from Goldman Sachs, he's the treasury guy. You got Geithner, he's from Goldman Sachs, he's our treasury guy. And it all swirls around the New York Federal Reserve. But there's a great documentary about the Fed and what will happen with all of the audit the Fed. Of course, they've shelved that for the time being. And it'll be a matter of time before we see if they're able to get out in front of the growing awareness of the criminality of the Federal Reserve, which is neither. Set up secretly with a meeting held in secret on Jekyll Island, passed a couple days before Christmas in Congress with a handful of folks, the Federal Reserve Act of 1933, a private organization loans us money and we pay interest. It's pretty much why that guy Jesus threw the money changers out. So whether or not you even believe in any of that, the stories are, and the morals are where it's at, not the dogma and not the fundamentalism. The Fed under fire.
It's surprising to me that it's gotten essentially no mainstream media coverage at all, because we're talking about so much money.
the Federal Reserve is the black hole in American democracy.
All we have to say is, what do they have to hide?
The Federal Reserve had a responsibility to provide oversight for the conduct of banks. They didn't do that.
It's known as one of the most powerful and secretive institutions in Washington. And now, President Obama wants to hand the Federal Reserve even more power.
I am proposing that the Federal Reserve be granted new authority and accountability for regulating bank holding companies and other large firms that pose a risk to the entire economy in the event of failure.
The President's plan to make the Fed the systemic risk regulator has raised eyebrows on Capitol Hill.
The President's financial reform proposal has included broad and sweeping increases in Chairman Bernanke or his successor's powers. And if that power is used, what will be the oversight?
I believe that we have to adequately audit the Federal Reserve before any consideration is given to making the Federal Reserve a systemic risk regulator.
A growing number in Congress are calling for the Federal Reserve to be fully audited, the first time in its history. It's a movement that started with one Washington outsider, whose ideas have largely been ignored by the mainstream of both political parties. Texas Congressman Ron Paul. He's been trying to audit the Federal Reserve for years without success. But in the last few months, his bill to open up the Fed's books has spawned a rare bipartisan coalition of more than 250 co-sponsors, a majority of the House of Representatives.
The best answer I have about defending my bill is asking the question, why not?
That's just a quick clip from the Fed under fire. You, of course, heard from Ron Paul, of course, the author of the H.R. 1207 Audit the Fed Bill. You heard from Dennis Kucinich and other guys in there. The word is definitely out. And we're going to jump to ZeroHedge.com. ZeroHedge.com. These are the people who do not want the Fed's veil lifted. And it's basically the rundown of the folks who are opposing the bill, calling it the Fed Independence Petition. And among the list, we have people like Scott Anderson from Wells Fargo, Richard Berner from Morgan Stanley, Michael Feroli from J.P. Morgan, David Greenlaw from Morgan Stanley, Peter Hooper from Deutsche Bank, Ellen Hughes from the Ford Motor Company, Bruce Kasman from J.P. Morgan Chase, Kevin Logan from Dresdner Kleinwort, Robert Melman from J.P. Morgan. You're noticing a theme, a pattern? Those are just some of the folks. We'll end the econo crash note on the homeless, the deficits, the world currency, and the Fed under fire with the latest hit from Big Mouth Biden. We have to go spend money to keep from going bankrupt. This from CNSNews.com. Vice President Joe Botox Biden told people attending an AARP town hall meeting that unless the Democrat-supported health care plan becomes law, the nation will go bankrupt, and that the only way to avoid that fate is for the government to spend more money. Got to spend money to make money.
And also, AARP knows, and the people with me here today, the president, knowing I know, that the status quo is simply not acceptable. It's totally unacceptable, and it's completely unsustainable. Even if they wanted to keep us the way we have it, they can't do it financially. We're going to go bankrupt as a nation. Now, people say, well, I say that to people, they say, what are you going to do? You're telling me we got to go spend money to keep us going bankrupt? The answer is yes, I'm telling you.
You're telling me we have to go spend money to keep from going bankrupt? The answer is yes, that's what I'm telling you. More of the same. More of the same. So we've met the new boss. We've gone over Obamasiah and the Apostles of War with the torture probes and MSNBCIA and hit squads and birthers and eugenics and czars. But for me, what so much of all of this comes down to is the event that produced the blank check for all that we've seen in the last almost 8 years. Here we are now, less than 2 months away from the 8th anniversary of 9/11. And still, steadily, constantly, every day, the official story crumbles. There's been so much coming out about 9/11. Again, I could just do a 9/11 research show. Sometimes I think I'd like that. But there's too much going on all around the whole media world. I can't focus. But the latest 9/11 updates, Rowley, Ryan, and a new investigation, plus tons more updates. We're going to start off with ex-FBI agent and why she supports a new 9/11 investigation. This written by Colleen Rowley. In the absence of my being there in New York City to stand with the 9/11 families, first responders, and survivors, I offer the following statement in support of your goal of a new investigation into the attacks of September 11th and the NYC CAN campaign. NYCCAN.org, New York City CAN, and place it on the ballot for November. NYCCAN.org. At the time of 9/11, I'd been an FBI agent for over 20 years. The official dissembling and excuse-making about the true causes and prior mistakes that gave rise to and allowed the terrorist attacks to happen almost immediately ushered in the Bush-Cheney administration's egregious and lawless post-9/11 war on terror agenda, which bore no connection to the original causes and no connection to the goal of reducing terrorism and making the world safer. When I got a chance, about 8.5 months after 9/11, to tell what I knew, I did so, and my disclosures led to further investigation by Department of Justice investigator, Inspector General, and figured into the 9/11 Commission report. But it was way too late for this emerging bit of truth that has continued to leak out in dribs and drabs to have any impact. Therefore, cutting to the chase, jumping to the bottom, I fully support the 9/11 families, first responders, survivors, and over 60,000 other New Yorkers who have endorsed a new 9/11 investigation in New York City as advanced by the ballot referendum coming this November. You might recall that Colleen Rowley, Cynthia Hooper, and Sharon Watkins were the three Persons of the Year for Time Magazine in 2002. Cynthia Cooper, whistleblower from WorldCom, Sharon Watkins, whistleblower from Enron, and the aforementioned Colleen Rowley, whistleblower for the FBI. I implore you to get out the NYCCAN.org initiative to anybody you know living in New York. I'm going to do the same. Alex Constantine goes into the GOP ties to three of the alleged 9/11 hijackers. However, we're going to jump to another whistleblower. Ex-Underwriters Lab manager on the demolition access to the World Trade Center towers, Kevin Ryan. On occasion, the public has been asked by George W. Bush to refrain from considering certain conspiracy theories. Bush has made such requests when people were looking into crimes in which he might be culpable. For example, when in 1994, Bush's former company, Harkin Energy, was linked to the fraudulent Bank of Credit and Commerce International, the BCCI scandal, through several investors, Bush's spokeswoman and cohort, Karen Hughes, shut down the inquiry by telling the Associated Press, quote, "We have no response to silly conspiracy theories." On another occasion, Bush said in a televised speech, "Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories concerning the attacks of September 11th. But paradoxically, we've also been asked to believe Bush's own outrageous conspiracy theory about 9/11, one that has been proven to be false in many ways. One important way to see the false nature of Bush's conspiracy theory is to note the fact that the World Trade Center buildings could only have fallen as they did through the use of explosives. A number of independent scientific studies have pointed out this fact. Cite, link, link, source. But it was Bush's own scientists at NIST, through their inability to provide a convincing defense of the official lie, who ultimately proved that explosives were necessary. Cite, link, link, source. This leads us to the obvious question, who could have placed explosives in the towers? We had the flashback to last week, the explosive story about the GAO, the Government Accountability Office, easily smuggling bomb materials into 24 federal buildings. So these were, you know, post 9/11 lockdown federal offices and buildings. We went through last week all the power downs, the dogs being called off, the evacuations, the strange noises going on in the buildings in the days prior to 9/11. And we also noted from the film, the Academy Award-winning documentary Man on Wire, if a bunch of wacky French acrobats could sneak a bunch of shit secretly all the way up and pull off a big circus tightrope show, don't you think somebody else could do it? But it goes on. Again from the Associated Press, post 9/11 surveillance went beyond wiretapping. The Bush administration authorized secret surveillance activities that still have not been made public, according to a new government report that questions the legal basis for the unprecedented anti-terrorism program. It's unclear how much valuable intel was yielded by the surveillance program started after 9/11, according to the unclassified summary of reports by five inspectors general. The reports mandated by Congress last year were delivered to lawmakers Friday, July 10th. You can download that whole PDF, 2.5 megs, the President's Surveillance Program. And that's a more appropriate title, I think. I don't think we should call it Bush's Surveillance Program. Any more than I think that Bush knocked down the towers. But a quick clip from LaRouchePack.com on the new article, 9/11 Cover is Blown. It's Jeff Steinberg on some of the new 9/11 developments.
For 8 years, the American people have been told that we were living in the post 9/11 world. We should be afraid of Islamic terrorism. We're living in the age of the war on terror, this ambiguous term. But obviously you and Mr. LaRouche, who we both work with, have taken a very different view on what the nature of this situation is. To quote from this article you just wrote, titled, 9/11 Cover is Blown, you said, early this year, the National Archives released documents from the files of the 9/11 Commission, which were previously classified. Three of the documents recently obtained by EIR provide the smoking gun, providing the central role of Saudi intelligence and the critical support role of British intelligence in the preparation and execution and cover-up of 9/11. Now, I'd like to get into that in just a second, but maybe quickly for our viewers, can you provide some insight into the fact, what is the strategic analysis that you and Mr. LaRouche had that allowed you to, since day one, have a very different view of the nature of these attacks and what the situation has been in the United States?
Well, I think, for starters, you've got to go back about 9 months before the 9/11 attacks, when Mr. LaRouche delivered testimony before the Senate Judiciary Committee concerning the confirmation of John Ashcroft as Attorney General. And Dr. Deborah Freeman, who's Mr. LaRouche's spokesman, delivered the testimony, quoting extensively from Mr. LaRouche's recent writings in opposition to Ashcroft. And at that time, LaRouche warned that the character of the Bush administration was that he expected that they would look for the first opportunity to carry out, in conjunction with political allies, a kind of a Reichstag fire incident that would give them the ability to go for an overturn of the Constitution and the development of dictatorial powers over the United States. And so the September 11th attack, 9 months after this, occurred in the context in which LaRouche was continuing and updating his warnings that he expected a major domestic incident to occur in order to provide that kind of Reichstag fire. So top down, LaRouche's evaluation of the nature of the Bush-Cheney presidency was that they would work with allied political forces internationally to carry out this kind of attack on the United States for purposes of dictatorship.
And there you have it. More 9/11 updates. FBI claims to review hypothesis for exclusive GPS-guided autopilot control of 9/11 aircraft. That is more great work. Aidan Monahan doing yeoman's work, filing all the FOIA requests and posting them up to 911blogger.com. More great work, and I should almost stop saying it and stop being surprised. I find it quite fascinating. I love their website, love their YouTube channel. Russia Today talks to Richard Gage of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, and they ask the question, is 9/11 Truth still in a cloud of smoke?
Years after the tragedy of 9/11, many questions remain unanswered. A group of experts has convened in Washington to discuss what they think happened that day. And as RT's University reports, some of their theories are in stark contrast to the official version of events.
Here's the
September 11th, 2001, World Trade Center number 7. The U.S. government said that this building and the two others collapsed as a result of fires ignited by jet fuel. But according to these folks, those are all lies. Richard Gage is the founder of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. An organization of experts and professionals who believe that the real story behind the destruction of the towers is still up in smoke.
No building has ever collapsed due to fire in a high-rise building, ever. The Twin Towers were brought down with explosive-controlled demolition. We have a free-fall collapse in the case of Building 7 for 100 feet of its fall, which can't happen without the columns being forcibly removed as in a typical controlled demolition.
Volunteers came from all over the country to show videos, hand out brochures, and point out the inconsistencies between government agencies' explanations of what happened on 9/11 and scientific evidence that seems to prove otherwise.
We have chemical evidence of high-tech explosives found in all of the dust. We have evidence of thermite found in the molten iron sample. This can't happen in normal office fires. They don't have half the temperature required to melt steel. Where did the molten iron come from?
And those at the convention seem to be eating this new information right up. They, too, wanted more answers.
I could certainly find it easy to believe that the truth was covered up.
If something other than airplane fuel made the World Trade Centers come down, we need to understand what that was and what caused it.
I would need to know a lot more about what's going on here.
And with this group calling for a fresh look at the attacks that shook America, one question lingers.
Who put the explosives there?
We don't know who may have put the explosives there or why or how they did it. So we're asking for a real investigation, and let's let the chips fall where they may.
Gage is just one of over 700 architects and engineers who claimed that it was a controlled demolition that resulted in the collapse of the World Trade Center. And now these experts are calling for a brand new investigation into the September 11th attack in the hopes of uncovering more of the truth underneath all the rubble. Dina Fox, KRT, Washington.
Let justice be done, though the heavens fall. Jim Garrison said it, and it's still true today. And yet, the 9/11 updates still go on. Worker injured in fall at World Trade Center site. That's from 1010 Winds. But from the Wall Street Journal, judge denies bid by airlines to question the FBI in 9/11 case. A judge has denied a motion by a group of airlines to depose several Federal Bureau of Investigation agents regarding the government's probes into 9/11. In an order Thursday, U.S. District Judge Alvin Hellerstein in Manhattan denied a motion by the airlines to question six current and former FBI agents, a potential setback for their defense. The judge indicated the airlines' defendants hoped to show at trial that the government's failure to apprehend the terrorists and stop the attacks was so considerable that it mitigates and excuses any alleged faults of the airlines, and the terrorists likely would have succeeded even if the defendants had exercised due care. The government's failures to detect and abort the terrorist plot would not affect the aviation defendants' potential liability, the judge wrote. Moreover, efforts to prove these propositions would cause confusion and prejudice and burden court and jury with long delays and unduly lengthy trial proceedings. The rulings relate to three wrongful death cases and 19 property damage cases. The defendants include units of UAL Corp, that's United Airlines, U.S. Airways, Delta Airlines, Continental, and AirTran. A lawyer for the airlines didn't immediately return a phone call seeking comment yesterday. The judge did allow some of the testimony of two of the FBI agents from the trial of 9/11 co-conspirator Zacharias Moussaoui, who is serving a life sentence, namely what they learned in their investigations. Testimony as to what their superiors did or did not do is not relevant and is not admissible. The judge also denied a motion to admit the 9/11 Commission report as a whole as evidence in the case, instead only admitting the chronology provided in the report. Won't even let them submit the phony cover-up as evidence. What does that tell you? That's a fascinating case, and again, we see it a lot of times where, whether it's states or people or businesses pushing back against the feds, they don't generally do it from any sort of moral standpoint, unfortunately. They usually do it because of money. 9/11 lawsuit turns into show trial. That's from Washington's blog, but from New York Times, new arguments in 9/11 case. A federal appeals court in Richmond, Virginia, ordered new arguments in the case of Zacharias Moussaoui, the only person to stand trial in an American court for the terrorist attacks. A panel of the United States Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit heard arguments in the case in January, but one of the judges retired last week after receiving a diagnosis of early-onset Alzheimer's disease. Mr. Moussaoui is serving a life sentence after pleading guilty to helping plan the attacks, which killed nearly 3,000 people. He has changed his story and has asked for a new trial. Links in there to WHSV.com, as well as the Star Telegram, and of course, Wikipedia and HistoryCommons.org. Five 9/11 detainees boycott the Guantanamo hearing. That's from the Deutsche Press Agency. But lastly, on our 9/11 updates, a relative of 9/11 victim frustrated by Obama efforts to close Gitmo. This from Fox. President Obama's executive order to close the Guantanamo Bay Detention Center by January and halt military trials of terrorism suspects there has revived painful memories of 9/11 for some relatives of the victims. Obama has promised relatives of the victims that they would be part of the process of closing the prison. In February, he met with roughly 40 family members of the victims and said he wanted what they do, justice for their loved ones. But some relatives have been frustrated by the administration's efforts. I didn't go in there prepared for how frustrated I'd be afterward, said Melissa Long, referring to a meeting last month with Obama officials. They listened. Only one of them took notes, and the rest of them took flack. They took a lot of heat. There were a lot of questions unanswered. This is, of course, referring in February with the 9/11 victims' family members, as well as some folks, family members of the USS Cole. They met with Obama, and of course, they were mollified. Their fears were allayed. They were in awe of the Obamasiah. There was one woman who never took the payout money, never took the shut-up money, never stopped asking for a new investigation. Her name was Beverly Eckert. She was one of the people meeting with Obama in February. However, 7 days later, she was dead in the crash of Flight 3407. There are a lot of flashback links for you. 9/11 widow, an activist among 50 killed in the crash. Obamasiah, 9/11 taxes, and the Buy American remorse. We've also got Obamasiah and the Jersey Girls and Kissinger. I should also remind you that my interview a couple of months ago now with Alex Constantine focuses on the curious crash of Flight 3407 and all its bizarre connections to the bioweapons industry, to the banksters, to the feds, to the spooks. So again, as we rapidly approach the 8th anniversary, there will be much more focus on 9/11 and the crumbling cover-up on MediaMonarchy.com. We've got two last postings to blast through. We've got geopolitics, but first it's Police State International, CCTV, checkpoints, provocateurs, and you. That's Y-O-O. A San Francisco suburb called Tiburon, they might install license plate cameras. That's from the San Francisco Guardian. Big Brother flies into Antelope Valley, California with crime-fighting eyes. That's from avpress.com. Pennsylvania State Police, Ohio Highway Patrol, New York State Police, and U.S. Border Patrol teamed up for a traffic enforcement initiative. That's from goerie.com. July 4th parade plus Constitution equals banned for life. That's from silentmajority09.com. U.S. launches review of the vaunted terror warning system. That's right, the color-coded system. The Obama side has taken a second look at that. That's from the Washington Times and the AFP. IT Central and DHS to debate over Real ID and the PASS Act, which again we've gone over many, many times recently. The Real ID morphing into the PASS Act again. It's all essentially a national ID with a microchip for you. Well, speaking of you, spy memo author John Yoo says to America, no apologies for wiretapping you. That's from Threat Level. India is, of course, getting into the act. I believe we've maybe mentioned this before, but here it is again. India to issue 1.2 billion new biometric ID cards. And the last Police State International note with a clip, however, not exactly focusing on what the article focuses on from the Times Online, but it's the classic case of bringing in agent provocateurs to cause violence, whether it's at protests or events, whether it's at the Battle for Seattle, bringing in the kids trained by Delta Force in Washington to smash Starbucks windows, whether it's the cops dressed up like protesters, going to throw rocks, getting busted at the Montebello 2 years ago. The people who want to start violence are generally feds at worst and just fools. Northern Ireland rioters were bussed in to provoke violence.
When it comes to the point in July when orange men march through contentious areas, tension can often overspill into running battles. The North Belfast district of Ardoyne has seen rioting before, but this the worst it's been for 5 years. At one point a shot was fired from the crowd. Police made sure protesters would push back and eventually allowed orange men and their bands to make their way along the Crumlin Road under a hail of missiles.
The violence was repeated in parts of Londonderry, Armagh, and in the county Antrim village of Brashagan, but these were predicted trouble spots.
Around a dozen police officers were injured across Northern Ireland. The service said the rioters displayed the worst possible face in Northern Ireland, a face of bigotry, sectarianism and intolerance that is not representative of the vast majority of people who have moved on and embraced a peaceful future. As vehicles burned late into the night, Sinn Féin blamed dissident Republicans coming into flashpoints to cause trouble. They said, this evening's actions expose very clearly the anti-peace process and sectarian agenda which feeds these factions. It has nothing whatever to do with Irish republicanism. much of this year's marching was trouble-free. The tourist board had even tried to create an idea that it was a festival open to all, but the violence illustrates that in some parts, divisions can still be a catalyst for trouble. Tom Palmer to Sky News, Belfast.
The latest case of agent provocateurs causing violence, this time in Northern Ireland. We now jump to our last posting on geopolitics, bombs, moms, coups, and a moral twilight zone. We've got a video that we don't have time for. The warmongers who sold you the Iraq war are still pushing for a war with Iran. Stop bombing us. Osama isn't here, says Pakistan. This is from the Sunday Times, but it's important. There's also a nice editor's note up on Infowars.com, of course, going into the fact that bin Laden has been dead since 2001. Probably blown up in Tora Bora. That's what the military says. Warships in the Suez Canal prepare for Iran attack. That's from YNetNews.com. Israeli soldiers in Gaza describe a moral twilight zone. That's from McClatchy. And from MANNews.net, MANNews.net. Israeli soldier threatened to rape the mother of a detained boy, reportedly saying, quote, "Shut up or I will fuck you." China says 184 lives claimed by the latest unrest and rioting. More Russian military forces in China for joint anti-terror exercises. Two Cuban CIA operatives advised the recent Honduras coup. That's from Alex Constantine, but from Global Research, Washington behind Honduras coup, and here is the evidence. As far as we went into the recent Honduras coup, of course, that's Obama's my first coup, that two of the guys that were involved were trained at Fort Benning in Georgia, the School of the Americas, School of the Assassins, where people come and learn how to be third world thugs and military dictators and drug runners, and they go out and do it in the world, of course, taught by the best. Our last note on geopolitics is a news story. It broke in the middle last night. Blasts at Jakarta, Indonesia. Ritz and Marriott hotels kill 9, wound 50. The updates may be much worse. But this from the Associated Press. Bombs minutes apart ripped through two luxury hotels in Jakarta Friday, killing 9 and wounding at least 50 more, ending a four-year lull in terror attacks in the world's most populous Muslim nation. At least 14 foreigners were among the dead and wounded. The blast at the Marriott and Ritz-Carlton hotels located side by side in an upscale business district in the capital blew out windows and scattered debris and glass across the street, kicking up a thick plume of smoke. Facades of both hotels were reduced to twisted metal. I don't see updates smacking me in the face on Google News right now on the Jakarta blasts. We do see that Tehran's streets erupt after a key cleric speaks. Worldwide condemnation of Jakarta hotel attacks. And what we don't know yet, but what we generally see whenever there are amazingly coordinated attacks, they've usually been helped along by intelligence agencies. They're the ones who know how to make big, huge, prime-time, made-for-TV coordinated events. Regular people usually fuck up and blow themselves up. Some of the other latest updates that I do have posted up, if you check out the sidebar on MediaMonarchy.com for the highlights and headlines from Press TV in Unity Sermon, Rafsanjani regrets crisis handling. From McClatchy, is Bank of America's profit really hiding a loss? From WhatReallyHappened.com, comparing Zionists to Nazis to be criminalized, also by way of deprogram.net. From Infowars, Wausau cops enlist emergency police volunteers. From Cryptagon, we've got the NHS instructed to plan for up to 65,000 swine flu deaths. And I mentioned a little while ago the new article from James Corbett Did the real cyber 9/11 happen on 9/11? That's his new article that goes into the software tech firm known as P-Tech. So hopefully in the near future, and like I said, James Corbett is on a much-needed, much-deserved vacation. Hopefully we might twist his arm and get him on the Skype line to talk about 9/11 and cyber terrorism. So you know what that means now, my friends. It's time for the list of creepy customers coming to MediaMonarchy.com in the past week. Again, if you're new to the show, or new to the site, again, welcome aboard. I use StatCounter.com to track my hits. So, you know, you see a little counter on a website and it says blah, blah, blah hits on this website. What that gives you on the back end is a login to look at where that traffic is coming from, and the longer I do the website, the more interesting the traffic becomes. We had visits from Massachusetts General Hospital out of Boston. They hit me up from my link on AboveTopSecret.com about the recent terror drills called Ardent Sentry. We had the Associated Press out of New York City visiting MediaMonarchy.com. We'll see if they'll try and stop me from posting up Associated Press stories, as they would like to do to bloggers. The U.S. Department of Energy out of Rio Rancho, New Mexico, they googled End of the World Machine, and that's, of course, referring to the CERN supercollider. Executive Yuan Atomic Energy Committee out of Taipei, they were reading about why were first responders decontaminated at the Pentagon. That's digging back into the archives on MediaMonarchy.com. We had Fort Lewis, lewis.army.mil, out of Tacoma, Washington. They googled Ardent Century, as if they don't know what that is. Tinker.af.mil, the 754th Electronic Systems Group out of Montgomery, Alabama, visited. Again, headquarters USAISC out of Newport News, Virginia. They were reading about the first ever Masonic ball that was held for Obama on January 20th. The Maine Bureau of Taxation out of Augusta, Maine, visited. Again, USAISC headquarters. They googled Operation Ardent Century. These guys may not know what it was because they misspelled Century. Department of Homeland Security out of Springfield. Fort Hood, hood.army.mil. We also had USEUCOM headquarters, UCOM.mil. They googled Minot theft, ICBM. Of course, Minot Air Force Base being the home of the rogue B-52s that, you know, flew nuclear missiles across the country to Barksdale in Louisiana. Cirque du Soleil from Quebec, Montreal, visited MediaMonarchy.com. We also had the Department of Primary Industries of Queensland from Brisbane, Australia. We had the National Research Council of Canada out of Ontario. We had the American College of Radiology out of L.A. They googled FEMA exercise in July, and yes, there is. We've mentioned it before. It's coming up soon. It's from FEMA. And the good folks at Northrop Grumman bringing you the National Level Exercise 2009, July 27th through the 31st. Of course, more on that next week on MediaMonarchy.com. The Navy Network Information Center out of Pensacola, Florida, they googled Arctic goo. We went over the Arctic goo that no one exactly knows what it is that's floating past Alaska communities. It's not oil. And finally, we had the McCall Pattern Company out of Kansas, and they googled civil unrest in USA 2010. And there it is. And there you have it. And it's another week of wonderful, horrible news on MediaMonarchy.com. You guys, if you like the show, if you dig the information, if it blows your mind, please help me spread the word about the site. There are times where there's so much that I want to do with the site that I'm not able to do because I'm only me. It's just me, pretty much, behind MediaMonarchy.com. I'm not a member of any group, not a part of any company. I'm just a guy who got turned on to parapolitics after 9/11. and I've done a website and a radio show for going on 3 years now. If you dig MediaMonarchy.com, help me spread the word about the site and the show. That's how it can grow. Put up links on your Facebook page. Import the feed into your MySpace or Twitter or God knows what. Just help get the word out. So that's going to do it for episode 132 of MediaMonarchy.com. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, reminding you, as always, and now more than ever, to get active or get radioactive. Take care.
Police would get him just the same.